Manchester City have won the Premier League.
Goals against Emil Heskey. Could it be five? Yes, it is.
Frank de Boer seeking out Dennis Bergkamp. Oh, that's brilliant! Oh, that's wonderful!
Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm Chris Lapp and joining me this week got Shane Lees.
Hello!
And Anthony Kendrick.
Hello, good evening.
You both good, lads?
I'm good, but I'm missing my weekly hero good evening.
Oh.
He's That's just not the same.
No,
it doesn't
no.
tickle my bollocks.
No, he's Do you have it on a loop or something? Like, you listen to it on a loop at night? Or?
Oh, you found me out.
Be quite a good text, you know, like a text ringtone or so. That sounds so £2.99.
Good evening.
Hey, £2.99.
Oh, make some money off that. Alright, so, I'm going to start this show with a topic that Anthony suggested. So, Man City manager Pep Guardiola is facing an FA charge of wearing a political message for sporting the symbol on his clothing in support of the imprisoned Catalan politicians. So, should Guardiola be allowed to wear a ribbon?
No. I'm probably going to... I reckon you'll disagree with me, Anthony, but no, I don't reckon he should be able to wear that ribbon. The rules are pretty clear. It outlines, even in UEFA's rules, FIFA's rules, you're not allowed to have open political affiliations on the football pitch, and that's a fair enough rule. Now, he's saying that UEFA have decided they're not going to penalise stuff like this, and that's fine. Okay, I can understand the reasons for doing that, mainly because they've got to be sensitive of the massive Spanish FA, which is pretty damn dominant. But the problem we've got here is it's not like it's something like the poppy, where it's a universal symbol all across Europe, where pretty much everyone understands exactly what it means, and it was understandable why people got a bit annoyed that it was being banned on the football pitch, on the sidelines. That was a universal symbol. It was not political, it was about remembering war dead. It didn't matter who it was, whether it was German, French, Belgium, English, it was all the same. But this is inherently political. This is not just saying, oh, I'm quite sad that there are political prisoners. That's not what this is saying. This isn't an amnesty badge. What this is saying, I am supporting the Catalan independence. That is what that's saying, because if you believe that they shouldn't be imprisoned, these Catalan independence leaders, what you're saying is that the election that they created was valid, and therefore the result was valid, therefore Catalan should be independent. That's what it is in a circle. So him wearing that badge is saying, I believe in Catalonian independence, and that's a political statement. So it should be allowed.
As much as I'd love to create an argument, I mostly agree with what you've said, Shane. I think it creates a problem if you allow things like this, because then, well, it's as the FA chairman said, where do you draw the line? It's a very it'd become a very complex issue. The one thing I would disagree with you on is when you say about the poppy. I think it's great that we wear it and what it represents. However, it isn't a well-known symbol across Europe, as far as I'm aware. I know people from like the Mediterranean and other areas of Europe who don't know what the poppy, who'd never seen a poppy before they came to England, and it was Remembrance Day.
That was by and large because the war was fought between central European powers. You go to Belgium or Germany, they know exactly what the poppy
is. Okay, yeah. Oh, I accept that, yeah. I don't know. I'm probably against it. He's chosen to wear it, and they can't stop him from wearing it in like pre- and post-match interviews and other things. But on the pitch, I think football should stay out of politics. But then, I don't know, then you've got, I do believe in the power of sport to change politics. I mean, look at the Winter Olympics. So then, that's another argument. But by and large, I think sport, football should stay out of politics and shouldn't have political symbols generally.
We've got to look at it as an issue in isolation and say, what would the meaning of it be if we decided to validate it? Because if we said it's fine, you can wear a ribbon, we're saying either we make an exception based on individual circumstances, basis, and so forth, or we're being universal, you can just about do anything. Now, of course, everyone's going to say you can't just about do anything. If someone walked onto the side of a pitch with a little swastika pin, that would be pretty well out of order. I don't think anyone would agree with it and say that shouldn't be in football. We shouldn't be like putting our views out there in that way. And it's the same kind of thing with this situation. As much as it's not that comparable, they're political symbols. They say I'm promoting and I'm for a political cause, so it is in the same sphere. But the alternative is to say we make an exception in exceptional cases. Now, for that one, why would we make an exception for this one? Is it because it's a nice thing to believe people shouldn't be imprisoned? Well, now we've got to actually ask ourselves, what are they being imprisoned for? Is that illegal? Should that have been illegal? if now we're getting into the whole concept of Malamin Say versus Malam Prohibitum, which is evil in itself and evil because it is prohibited, we are getting into some deep, deep shit there, where to decide whether or not this is now fine or this is not fine, because I don't know, this is a good idea, we don't mind it if you're supporting victimised people, we're creating too many problems for ourselves then. Suddenly we're now deciding we are backing things based on, I don't know, feeling. And now at that point, it all just becomes utterly meaningless. Because now it's, oh, that's a nice idea. He's going, oh, well, if we're supporting, you know, the trap miners in Chile, that's fine. And, you know, if somebody had a thing for trap miners in Chile, yeah, okay, sure, that's not a political thing. If it was about workers' rights in Chile, that's a different thing. Now we're talking about, we're getting close to things like socialism. So I just can't understand why people say, oh, it's fine, he should be allowed to because it's a nice cause. What if you don't agree it's a nice cause? Yeah. If you don't agree it's a nice cause, then surely you go, no, you shouldn't be allowed it because it's not a nice cause. How about we just cut out all of that and go, doesn't matter what the cause is the cause political? Then you're not allowed it. Simple as that. And that's what the whole point of these rules are, to get rid of all those debates and to get rid of teams being attached to things, because we don't want situations like Spain where two clubs hate each other, not because, you know, they're local rivals or anything like that, but because they know one people are representing essentially one nationality, one political cause, and one or another. You know, you've got Madrid is very much tied to the, you know, Franco and so forth, and Barcelona to the Catalan independence. We don't want that stuff. We don't want that in football, because that's dividing lines that end up causing violence, just like with Rangers and Celtic. We don't want that stuff. Get that stuff out of football. Football's a sport. That's what it's meant.
Yeah, and also, just as another point, that the you know, the English Premier League should really be getting involved in Spanish politics. Like, if it was something to do with English politics, maybe you'd see it in a different way, but the fact that it's dealing in foreign politics where, you know, 99% of people don't have much knowledge of what's going on, and getting involved in another country's politics isn't a good thing really to be doing, you know, that's another point, I think.
Yeah, and frankly, I think they should throw the book at Guardiola. If it was, you know, I think if it was most other managers, if this was like Alan Pardew was wearing something like this, they'd give him, you know, they'd say, right, you're getting a stadium ban, or you're not allowed to be on the sidelines, you're not allowed to be in a dressing room, and until you actually remove that thing, that's not going to change. Because you throw that at Guardiola, he'll stop wearing the bloody thing. Or wear it so far on the inside of his shirt, you can't even see it's there. I don't buy this idea of, you know, he's wearing it under his jacket, so you can only see it at certain camera angles. No, no, these are the rules. This is just like two-footed tackles. You can't go, well, I don't agree that two-footed tackle shouldn't be allowed, so I disagree with the red card. He's not red carded, he's just coming back on the pitch now. It's fine, we're just ignoring you, ref. If we're just saying this is all bollocks, then we can just ignore any of the rules. Your managers can swear in interviews and all of that kind of stuff, and they can call the referees all and sundry. So, no, I think they should throw a book in. I think they've been way too lenient, because they just don't want to risk almost getting involved in the political debate now. And I think that is just them being pussies.
You also got to say that Martin Glenn's comments weren't great either.
Yeah, that's the next thing. So, yeah,
you've got the Star of David in there with a swastika.
Mm.
One, I mean, that's just basic stupidity. Not only were, you know, one of those peoples genocided by the others, one's a religion, one's a political symbol.
Mm. Yeah.
Pretty damn different things. And there's a different rule for religious symbols. So that would have been fine for that one. But yeah, that goes to show what his level of thinking was at that point. Maybe he was drunk.
Sorry. Alright, so instead of doing some of the pitch this week, we've decided to try and do something a bit different. So Anthony is going to pick a team made up from players from the north of England. Then later in the show, Shane is going to pick a team from the south of England. And then we're going to put a poll up on Twitter, and you can vote who you think which side will win. So, Anthony, what's your 11? And what's your formation you're thinking of playing?
It's a 4-3-3, I suppose, 4-5-1-4-3-3, depending what you cluster the wingers as.
Yeah.
I suppose it could be a 4-2-3-1, whatever you want it to be, I suppose. Any of those three.
All right, cool.
I'm glad you're not my manager. Like, we're going to be playing with three formations today.
All right, I'll go through the team anyway. So you've got De Gea in goal. I think that's, well, you know, there's a debate for Edison, I think, but I've gone for De Gea. Kyle Walker, Virgil van Dijk, Nicolas Otamendi, and Andrew Robertson in defence. Mm. Matic, De Bruyne, and Silva in midfield. And then in attack, Mo Salah, Leroy Sané, and Sergio Aguero.
I can't put Mo Salah in there.
Right, okay. Hero put this on me last minute, just to say, he thought that Benjamin Mendy should get the nod. I don't think he can based on the amount of Premier League football he's played. I think Andrew Robertson's fantastic form. You know, at United you've got different left backs, Ashley Young, Luke Shaw. I didn't feel right picking any of them. I think Andrew Robertson's been in really good form lately, and if I was playing a game today and I had to pick a left back, I would pick him. Another player who I've excluded on form, which probably raised a few, two players are Pogba and Sanchez. On current form, I don't think they're in the best 11.
Did you say Mo Salah?
Yeah, Mo Salah, Aguero and Sané.
Sorry, I missed that.
So it's De Gea, Walker, Van Dijk, Otamendi, Robertson, Matic, De Bruyne, Silva, Salah, Sergio Aguero, Leroy Sané.
I'll tell you what, the only one I massively disagree with is Andrew Robertson. For me, Fabian Delph has been a better left-back, and he's a midfielder.
Delph's had a, I maybe could have put Delph in. He has played well this season.
I've got to say, I do completely agree with you excluding Pogba and Sanchez. Sanchez, you know, obviously in his time as Arsenal, he's predominantly a southern player, but I wouldn't have put him in my southern team either, with the team I've picked. He's been so off form this year, and I've watched him in a Man United shirt. It's like he's traded places with Mkhitaryan, but decided to inherit Mkhitaryan's ability. he seems to be the precise player that Man United just traded him for, in terms of more or less useless. Can't really. He looks really good when he's on the ball, and then does nothing. Can't quite explain it, how those things go together, but does absolutely nothing that's of any real value to the team. And Pogba, I don't know, I'm still not convinced about Pogba. Everyone keeps telling me how good Paul Pogba is, and I think, yeah, he's great on paper and he's great on YouTube. I've watched him for, two seasons now in the Premier League, is it, or three seasons? I can't quite recall. I've still yet to see anything that makes me think, yeah, he's a game-changing midfielder. Yeah, he's one of those midfielders who is going to win you a game. He's your Luka Modric. You know, he can win you a game defensively, he can win it offensively, he's a player like that. I'm still not convinced he's even anywhere near that level, and, you know, Modric is an aging player. I look at him and think, it's all very fancy. You can sometimes get very aggressive and go on those Jack Wilshere styles, I'm going to break the legs of the last man who tackled me. But I don't really see, apart from, I'll put it this way, and this is probably the harshest way I can put it, if he didn't occasionally score long shots, no one would give a shit.
I think with Pogba, though, the thing is if he was playing under Guardiola, I think he'd be a really good player. I think he'd be playing a lot better. There's a few other players at United, it's the same thing, but based on this season, under Mourinho, the season and a half he's had, or nearly two seasons now, he's not shown anything to suggest he is a world-class player. He's done enough to show he's a good player who can win man of the matches against small teams, as I know Hero likes to bring up his number of man of the match awards. But, you know, United didn't sign Pogba to dominate a game against Stoke. You know, we signed him to win us the title, basically, to dominate games against Manchester City and all the other top sides.
Yeah, people always go on to me about the amount of assists, you know, Pogba gets and all of these kinds of things, and I think, you know, what assist is he getting? Is he getting the one when you're 3-0 up, or is he getting the one when it's 0-0 and you've really got to go and do it? Is he getting an assist that, you know, one Mata could have equally have got, or is he getting an assist that only Paul Pogba can get, only a player like Luka Modric can get, or Toni Kroos? Because that is the difference, I think, with someone like Pogba. And I think Pogba is, I hate to say, he's a FIFA player. The only people who really rate him are people who play with him on FIFA, because they go, oh, his stats are so good, and he can do everything on the game. But you actually watch him in real life, his awareness of the game around him is shocking. His mental ability to play football, he just always wants another touch, another pass. And you think, my God, man, just give it as soon as you get the opportunity to. That's the first thing you learn in basic football. Find a player in space, give it to him, he's going to be in a better position than you to do something. His mental awareness is terrible. And without that, you'll never be a top footballer. So I cannot understand when people, my roommate is one of them, he's a United fan, he puts him in the same category as De Bruyne. He thinks he's better than De Bruyne, but only De Bruyne is better on form this season. And I think he's utterly mad.
I bet you were pleased, Dan. You kind of lost the opportunity to slate me. I guess you were probably expecting me to pick Paul Pogba.
Actually, no, I wasn't. I had enough respect for you.
Hero, his team.
Oh, God, yeah.
Just to name my bench as well, I don't know if you've done a bench, but I've got Edison, Stones, Valencia, Fernandinho, Sanchez, Lukaku and Mane. Valencia I was tempted to put in on form this season as well, but then Carl Walker's also had an excellent season and is probably, you know, the better player, but Valencia I think was close to making it.
Walker's proven me wrong. I put him as he's going to be the flop of the season in our predictions.
I didn't think he'd have a good season, but yeah, he's been exceptional for City.
Who's been bad for City. As I said, Fabian Delph has maybe been the best left-back in the league. It's Fabian Delph.
I guess I've only picked United, Liverpool and City, though. I don't know if there's any other teams or anything I should have considered.
It depends how much you're doing it on form. There's an argument to be made for, you know, Benmi and Tarkowski and Pope. But at the same time, I wouldn't have taken De Gea out for Pope. But I suppose there is an argument to be made for the centre-backs there, Burnley.
Yeah.
All right, shall we go on to this week's Champions League? So, probably the biggest story is Tottenham's Champions League ambitions came crashing down as Juventus produced 2 goals in a 3-minute spell in the second half. I thought it was a good game, this. I think Spurs only... I know, Juventus only had 3 shots on target, 2 of them went in. It was very unlucky from Spurs, I think.
It was one of those ones, you look at it and go, yeah, it's unlucky, they were better over 180 minutes, but it's knockout football, it doesn't matter.
Mm.
It doesn't matter if you're better, you've got to have it on the score sheet that you were the better team, and they didn't have that. People say, oh, you know, it was some unlucky moments in the game, and hit the post, all of these kinds of things. I think, right, yeah, but they let their concentration slip for 5 minutes against an elite team. Of course you're going to concede.
Yeah.
And concede. You can't do that against a team like that. Chelsea did it against Barcelona. Concentration slips for just a minute. And that's it. That's a goal. That's conceded. You can maybe do that against the likes of West Brom. And you're not going to get completely punished. But you cannot do it at that level. And I thought what Chiellini said after the game about, you know, Spurs, we know they have the capacity to throw it away, essentially. You know, he called them in the fanciest way, bottle jobs.
Yeah.
I don't think he was wrong, because that was exactly what we saw. They were comfortable. Conceded 2 goals, but the worst thing for me was the reaction to those 2 goals conceded. Because it was almost like nobody had told them they were going out. For the next 15 minutes, I think they didn't realise, genuinely, they were going to go out at that rate. Because they only really stepped on it in the last 10. Really the last 5, if we're being completely honest. And it was about how much it knocked the stuffing out of them. If you're a top European team, just like Juventus are, that doesn't knock you out. You say, no, we're still going to get chances. You know you're going to get the chances. You keep your composure. You keep trying to play well, but you've still got the urgency to go forward. That was what Juventus had in spades. They knew throughout that game, we keep below 1-0 here, we're always going to get a chance to get back in this. They were looking at it and thinking, we can concede 2. We score 2, we'll be all right here. Because when we can take it to extra time, we're confident that we're going to be able to take this English team on. And Tottenham, the second that first goal went in, you could tell they were not convinced of that by themselves. And for all the praise Tottenham get for, you know, the players and the way they play, I think, what do they have to show for it? And I know as a Southampton fan, it's pretty rich considering that's basically been our, you know, history for the last 5 years. But we're not pretending at Southampton to be an elite European team. Tottenham fans, Tottenham the club, they're making all the noises and that's what they are. But at any point where they have to show it, win silverware, to win anything, they're not doing it. I mean, how many times do you have to finish second, third, fourth, fifth, maybe, before you say you're not actually competing for it anymore? I don't know. I just, the whole Spurs project, everyone knows it will bottom out eventually if they don't start winning stuff, because the players will leave because they know they're good enough to win things. It's what happens next year or the year after, really, for me.
Well, Harry Kane's going to be the pivotal one, how long he stays at Spurs. I think if he goes, then it's suddenly, you know, dominoes, top players will leave or several players will go. I think that's what's key for them. Just going back to Juve, I do want to say that I think the Juventus manager, Allegri, deserves credit, because right before they scored their goals, he realised they needed to change things on the wings, and he brought on Lichtsteiner and Asamoah, the right back and the left back, who I thought were crucial to them winning the game. So yeah, credit to him, I think.
Yeah, it's a switchover that totally flummoxed the Tottenham team, because suddenly they were dealing with width they didn't know they weren't prepared for in the entire game. But at the same point, you're a professional team. You can watch and see who's coming on the pitch, and you can go, yeah, if I'm the fullback here, I'm going to have a little bit more to do at the moment. So I'm going to tell my winger, you've got to drop back a little bit deeper. We've got to deal with this together, because now we're dealing with 2 players coming down this flank. Again, it's that lack of concentration. They weren't paying attention to what was going on. They lost concentration. Changes got made and they didn't realise how to tactically adapt for it because they weren't focused on it, and then they conceded 2 goals. So it all comes back down to the same point, and I do agree, Harry Kane, whether or not he stays or goes, is really going to influence the team. The other probably big one is Dele Alli. But the thing is, people talk about Kane being loyal. He'll only ever be loyal up to a point. I don't think he's an Alan Shearer type player. He's going to stay there no matter what. I think if Real Madrid came in for him and they put in serious money, and he was on, yeah, and they Tottenham accept that offer, I don't think he's going to look at it and go, oh, I can stay here and win things with Tottenham, or yeah, I can be a Tottenham legend. He'll already be a Tottenham legend. he could leave now and still be one. I think he'd go at that point. Yeah, Dele Alli has got no reason to stay loyal either. He's an MK Dons player.
I think Real Madrid are expected to spend several hundred million in the next transfer window. You know, Benzema's probably going, Ronaldo's obviously getting on, and they need that third player who's been in rotation, sort of thing. I could see Gareth Bale coming back to the Premier League to Tottenham in a Harry Kane deal potentially. And yeah, I'm convinced Real Madrid will go for Kane in the summer.
I'll tell you what the other thing is, and no one's talking about it, but honestly, it does need saying at this point. How long do you actually give Pochettino?
How long has he been there? It's been 3 years.
Yeah, I think it has been 3 years now, because, or four, three or four, I can't remember precisely. But Tottenham have won, I mean, square nothing. Have they won a League Cup? I can't remember. I'm pretty sure they haven't. So they've won no titles. And we can say, yeah, Tottenham are definitely better than where they were before. But, I mean, they're fourth at the moment. They're probably quite likely to stay in fourth. If they finish much higher than that, it would be quite exceptional. And if they finish much lower than that, my God, that would have to be a collapse. But, you know, what was it, a year ago or 2 years ago when it was Leicester? Yeah, 2 years ago. They're finishing second.
Yeah.
Surely they're going backwards, actually. And we can put some of it onto the stadium and all of that lot. But Tottenham, they're not the team they were they? When everyone thought, yeah, they can compete for years. They've kind of gone a little bit backwards. How long do you seriously give Pochettino before you say, right, this has definitely improved us, but now we want to be at another level, and we're not getting there?
I would say until the end of next season, personally, at least.
I'd agree, yeah.
Sorry, Chris, I didn't mean
to. Sorry, I said I'd give him probably another 2 seasons. A 5-year project seems fair.
So. I think sometimes, as much as we criticise, you know, clubs for going through managers like nothing and all of that a lot, there's something to be said for the way a club like PSG handles the managers. They know what they want. Even if they have a successful season in other regards, if they're not getting what they want, the manager doesn't last. Because at the end of the day, there are targets. There are targets just like there are in every single one of our jobs. If you don't meet the key targets, you don't stay in the job.
What would be his targets? Would it just be finish top four? Maybe win a cup? What,
Pochettino's target, it can't be just finish top four, compete for a while and look half decent. That can't be what they're targeting him. Surely they're saying we want to win trophies. Surely they're saying compete for the league. This club is good enough. We've got the best striker in the league, two of the best midfielders in the league. We've got the best defence in the league and one of the best goalkeepers. Why on earth can't we compete?
Could I make a counter-argument?
Go for it.
Look at Arsenal. We have a go at Arsenal for just targeting top four and focusing on winning an FA Cup but not properly going for the Premier League. You know, if you can't have it both ways, having a go at Arsenal for just winning FA Cups or whatever, and then Tottenham maybe for having a go at winning the league ended up finishing second. When, you know, I think the Leicester season, I still maintain that Tottenham probably deserved to win the league, and Tottenham have been fantastic to watch in those seasons. What if they put maximum effort into the league, trying to do well in that, and then ditch the Cups maybe?
But the thing is, with Arsenal, I will say this now, people are quite critical of Arsenal for doing what they've been over the last few years, especially the Arsenal fans. The thing is, you got to say, like, with Tottenham, they go, oh, maybe we need to put more effort into the league or the Cups or whatever, and you think, right, cool, so you're not really putting overall effort into any of them, and you're not winning any of them simultaneously, because that's a failure of strategy right there, and that does come from the manager. But if we say, right, we want to be competitive in Europe, we want to try and win the Champions League, okay, go for it. We want to try and win the Premier League, okay, go for it. But they're not doing that, and how long do they continue to not do that before they say, we're not at the level we should be? I have a feeling Tottenham are going to look back at this as a generation missed. It's going to be a golden generation where they go, how on earth didn't we win something? Because, as I said, that team, you've got the best striker in the league, for me, without a doubt. You've got a couple of the best midfielders in the likes of Ali, Dembele, Eriksen. Between them, you've got some of the best midfielders in the league. And that defence, when it wants to, it can completely shut up shop. In Vertonghen and Rogwell, they've got two of the best centre-backs in the league. And, you know, I think Ben Davis, Danny Rose, Kieran Trippier, they've got very good fullbacks too. So they're probably looking at it and going, how much worse are we than City? How much worse are we than United? And the answer is, on their game, not a lot. And the last few years as well, when they've been going up against Chelsea, not a lot worse. When they've gone up against Leicester, technically a better team, definitely. So now they're looking at it and going, well, why aren't we winning? We should be winning things. Clubs don't just like to stand still and go, oh, we're happy to get top four. Because when they've got there, they think, right, what next? We're going to give you the money in the transfer market and so forth to go and build this team, and we're going to give you the wages for the players to keep them around. How long do they honestly give it? It's one of those things people were saying about Klopp, weren't they, last year? It's all very good, we're playing very lovely football, but we're still doing the exact same thing every single season, which maybe in Europe a bit more now. How long do you give Klopp before you have to say you actually have to start competing to win things rather than just playing very nice football? It seems incredibly harsh, and I'm definitely one of the people who promotes managers to stay in their jobs for a long time, but I think it's different rules for top clubs, and I'm not going to pretend that they play by those same rules as anyone else. It's different rules, and I don't think you can coast, and I think Pochettino is getting very close to being a manager who's coasting, and that's when he's in trouble.
Do you think, though, maybe this knee-jerk reaction, I'm sure if we were doing this podcast, you know, having the same conversation a week ago, I don't think you'd have been so harsh and so much, you know, saying that Pochettino needs to win things soon.
No, well, I wouldn't be having that reaction, but then Tottenham would still be in with a chance of winning the Champions League. Season's completely changed.
I'm just now, wondering if it's a knee-jerk reaction to what, you know, to going out the Champions League to this one game.
I think it's less a knee-jerk reaction, more just a realisation. And I think quite a few Tottenham fans are now starting to have that, where they go, yeah, what have we actually done? For all of how good it's been these last couple of years, what have we actually really had to celebrate? A top goal scorer? Is that what you want to celebrate as a club? Your individual? They're not doing it all.
Finishing above Arsenal?
Yeah. Finishing above Arsenal. What's that? You win a cup for that, do you? Congratulations, you finished above Arsenal. Yeah. We finished above Portsmouth for the last for other years. We don't celebrate that an inch.
Yeah, but I mean, if you think 3 years ago, when he got brought in, if he said in 3 years you'll be finishing above Arsenal most seasons, you'll get in the Champions League most seasons, getting out the group stage of the Champions League, and if you win a cup or two, and then once the 5 years are up, then you push on, redo your wage structure, because they're still paying low wages compared to the top six.
It is true, but you tell me honestly, do they not have the players to win this league? If everything goes right for them in one season, do they not have the players to win this league?
Yeah, definitely. Well, last
year. Yeah, they've got the players. So if it's not going right, and we can't say Tottenham have been an injury-prone side these last couple of years, it's the manager's fault. Because it's the manager, like Sir Alex Ferguson, when he's got a team which is kind of subpar, going off and winning the league, it's because he's doing everything right. He's getting that team to do everything right. We know this. Guardiola's doing it exactly at the moment. They're doing everything right. There's a couple of managers in the league at the moment who I think are coasting at the top clubs. I'd say Pochettino is getting very close to being one, and if he's not really doing much more by the end of next season, I don't think there's any reason to keep him. Klopp's another one. Much as they're playing great football, you know, they're in a similar position. They're being shone by one outstanding player, Tottenham, Kane, for Liverpool, Salah, but ultimately they're not competing for anything. And I think the other one, who's also getting very close to it, probably got one more season, is Mourinho.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm starting to sour on Mourinho, even though I loved him when he came in.
I've never been a Mourinho fan, but just with Tottenham, I just want to say, you say about they've got the players to win the Premier League. They have, and they haven't. Well, they have, because Pochettino has developed them into much better players than they were, and he's done a fantastic job with that side of things. You know, 2 years ago, Eric Dier, Moussa Dembele, you wouldn't say they're Premier League winning players, Vertonghen, Alderweireld when he was at Southampton. You know, he's really developed a side. I mean, on paper, you know, look, just to contrast with Man United and Mourinho, on paper, if I said to you 2 years ago, oh, Man United's midfield and attack in 2 years will be Pogba, Matic, Mata, Sanchez, Lukaku and whoever, Martial, whatever. You know, those four or five players, you know, that's on paper, that's the best midfield attack in the Premier League.
Yeah, it's true, but they've developed all these players and they've kept all these players. To what end? To put pressure on. It's got to be for a purpose, surely. And it's the end result that does matter at the end of it. I still say Tottenham have a team that can win the league on paper. And at the start of the season, they were one of those teams who everyone was going, yeah, they could do it this year. This could be their year. This was before Man City blew everyone out of the water. And yes, it's an exceptional season on that account. But it's all well and good putting these wonderful teams together. If it doesn't work, you're not going to stay in the job. Look at Zidane at Real Madrid. He developed the players there to be better than they were for two seasons straight. And now they're imploding, and he's not going to be in a job at the end of the season unless he wins the Champions League.
I take your point, but I don't think the Tottenham team on paper is as strong as the other top six teams, and I think he's really developed the players. And without Pochettino, Kyle Walker is not the best right back in the Premier League. Without Pochettino, Harry Kane perhaps, Dele Alli is not one of the best attacking midfielders, Moussa Dembele is not the best central midfielder, Aldo Rivero is not the best centre back. I think there's numerous examples of that development he's got, and I do take your point that he does need to win a trophy, but I think you're being too harsh personally. I'd kill to have Pochettino at United, for instance.
I get your point, and yeah, he's made all these players better, he's made a lot of those players a potential best in the league, but if he can't do anything with them, he's not the best manager for them. If he's got all those players who are that much better than when he started, and it's all thanks to him, why isn't he doing better? At the core of it, I hate to sound like one of the pundits on Soccer Saturday. It's a results business. If you don't turn it into results, it's all a lot of hoo-ha for nothing. But look at Southampton for the last few years. Doing amazing. We were doing amazing for what Southampton could do. We got into Europe, for God's sake. I mean, that's ridiculous. We were playing great football. What for? We might be going down this year. Worthless. We developed all these players. We did all this great stuff. What's it for? We didn't do anything with it. So it's pointless.
If Pochettino had got two or three £50 million signings like the other big teams have got, I would completely agree with you. However, he's not had that same level of backing. You know, he's signed players, not any big names. I think the right mid Sissoko from Newcastle is probably the most he spent. He's not done great. He's signed players like Aurier and Lucas Moura from PSG, who again were cheapish signings. If he'd have got say a Pogba or Sanchez or a De Bruyne or whatever, then maybe I'd be inclined to agree with you, even if it was one player. But he's not.
All right, I'm going to counter your point with a very, very easy one. Let's talk about this season and the signings that have been made this season. We could maybe go into last season a little bit as well. Who of the big signings, the big money players, the 50 million plus and all of that lot, and the 400 grand wages, which one of them has been an exceptional signing, has influenced the league, being won or lost? Very few, actually. It's actually the ones who are going under the radar that are making all the difference.
What, like De Bruyne?
De Bruyne was years ago.
Was it not at the start of last season?
No, was it? 90% certain it wasn't.
I think he's been there about 2.5 years, hasn't he?
Yeah. You're right. It was the season before. Yeah. Sorry.
In 2015. It's made no difference, all these big signings. For all the hype we give them and all of that lot, those aren't the players who are winning it. The last big signing, I think, to really have made an impact at a club was Ederson at City. That's a goalkeeper. Mm. That's the last real big money signing to have done it, within that season or two. The rest of them still haven't shown it yet. So I think that whole point is, as good as it is, it's the players who have been winning titles and so forth who have been the ones you wouldn't expect. Fabian Delph at left back for Man City, for instance. You take a player like that. I think it's, yeah, I still stick with Tottenham. As good as they've been.
Hang on, City was more of a project, but look at last season. Kante and Alonso coming in at Chelsea, David Luiz to an extent.
You're telling me that Tottenham couldn't have competed for Marcus Alonso? You're telling me they couldn't have competed for Kante from Leicester?
No, I don't think they could have done for Kante, no. Marcus Alonso, perhaps, but I guess with him being mates with Conte through Italy, that's a bit of a different one. But not Kante, no, not for me.
For me, all the players that you mentioned and all of the other ones we know have made those big impacts over the last 2 years, Tottenham could have signed them. They had as much chance to sign them as anyone else, as much money to sign them as anyone else. But people talk about the money they don't have. They can compete maybe with everyone but City and United on spending power. And the players City and United, with the exception I'd say of Ederson, have spent in the last 2 years. None of them have really been that consequential. Stones is the only other one who you'd say could be, but he's still a question of could be, not quite 100% yet. So, I got to say, as much as I understand where you're coming from, it's not a point I don't think has been relevant in the last 2 years.
Shall we go on to the
there
other
are big money signings that have come in and made an impact, but Sane has made a big difference, Kyle Walker as we've mentioned, Mo Salah, there's several, perhaps not to a title winning, perhaps. I don't know how long we've been discussing that, but I don't know if we want to move on or
welcome to the Tottenham podcast.
Gosh, that sounds like a really depressing place.
Should we move on to the other two games? There's not much to say about them really, is there? So Man City boss Pep Guardiola said his team forgot to attack against Basel when they suffered their first defeat at home since 2016. But they still reached the quarterfinals because they won 4-0 in the first leg.
I guess it was a motivation thing, weren't it? I guess because, for City it was just a game they were basically through. It's kind of hard to get motivated at 4-0 up. Mm. And for Basel it's like a cup final, he told the players to go out and win that game, and they did. For them, it's their cup final, and for City, it's just not motivated for it. So it was nice to watch. Actually, I thought nice to see.
I love it when my teams forget to attack. Yeah. Oh yeah, this game of football we're playing. That reminds me of when you're playing FIFA and you go to press clear the ball and your player slides instead, and you think, I love it in real life when players think, "Geez, I'm going to clear that ball." And suddenly, they're on the floor and they can't explain why they decided to slide tackle all of a sudden. Oh, we just forgot to attack. Well, we spent the whole game defending. We were just holding the wrong button. Jeez.
And then Jürgen Klopp said his team belonged in the quarterfinals, despite the 0-0 again. Boring 0-0 at Anfield, I would say. But then again, they were 5-0 up against Porto from the first leg, so...
Yeah, it's... I hate to say it, but we haven't really seen it yet from Liverpool. But I know they've just won that one 5-0. But against Porto, I think any of the teams could have won. I think Besiktas could have won.
You need Porto to get two or three, maybe two early goals that could have made that game a bit tasty.
Porto are nowhere near the team they once were.
No.
You look at those players and they have got no star power whatsoever. No ones you look at and go, oh God, they're going to be really good in a couple of years. We know they're going to be that good. They are not the team they once were at all. I think anyone could have beaten them. 5-0 is impressive over two legs, especially with, you know, doing 5-0 away from home. That's very impressive. But we're not really going to know what Liverpool can do until they face one of the bigger sides, and that's pretty much guaranteed now. So I think we judge Liverpool more on what happens in the next time more than anything.
I think, completely agree.
Right, so it's time for Shane to select your side made up of players who play in the South. So, from hearing Anthony's 11, did it make you want to change any of your selections?
No, it didn't. I've gone for a 4-2-3-1.
Sure.
4-2-3-1. I've decided that is a 4-2-3-1, not one of eight different formations. I've also decided I'm picking my team based on form this season, as in if we decided the season was ending today, who would get in it based on form? Who would be picked on that basis? So on that basis, I've gone for in goal, Courtois. Frankly, I don't think there was any real competition for that spot.
No.
At right back, I've gone for Kieran Trippier. Now, Victor Moses was a very, very close second, but the right backs in the South have not been spectacular this year. At centre backs, I've gone for Azpilicueta and Vertonghen. Mm-hmm. Now, I would have put Alderweireld in there, but he's been injured for most of the season, so we can't really count him for that. But I don't think you get much better than those two defenders in the South. At left back, I've gone for Marcus Alonso. Now, I was very tempted to go for Ryan Bertrand, because Bertrand still has been fantastic for us, despite the fact we're going down at the moment. But I thought, considering that we are going down at the moment, that should probably count against him, as he is actually a defender. So Marcus Alonso all the way. Central midfield is where it gets a little bit more probably dubious. I've gone for Dembele and Doucouré.
Oh,
now, I was going to pick Kante and Dier. Those weren't going to be my two, but I thought, actually, that's on paper, Kante and Dier. Kante hasn't been very good this season. I'm a very big fan of Kante, and it annoys me that he hasn't been good this season because my roommate thinks he's terrible, but I think he's insane for thinking that as well. And Dier, again, he's one of those ones who had a very good season last year, but I think he's been found out a little bit. So I've gone for Dembele and Doucouré. Doucouré has been one of the best midfielders in the league this year. I'll be shocked if he doesn't end up getting a very big move next year, and we know what for a club that
He's been linked with Arsenal this week.
Exactly the kind of player they need. He can do everything on the pitch. He can win the ball. He can get goals with his head, get goals with his feet, get him in the box, get him outside the box. He can score goals with his hand, as we know at Southampton. I mean, it was difficult for me to put him in there because he might have actually sent us down. But, yeah, he's been outstanding. And Dembele, as much as Pochettino went mental last week comparing him to Maradona, he is such a good player. You watch him in that Juventus game and he belonged on that pitch. So he's a great player this season. As my two wingers, I've gone for Heung-Min Son, who I think he is probably one of the most impactful wingers in the Premier League this year. I did have Willian as a potential other winger, but I wasn't sure. So I went for Hazard as well. As much as Hazard has not been at the standards he'd like to have been, I still think he's the best winger in the league, maybe. You're so close to the likes of the Man City players, who, admittedly, they're made to look good by the fact they're playing with so many other good players. I think Hazard, put it this way, if he was in that City team, he'd have banged in 20 goals. He even if he's not having the season of his life, he's still one of the best wingers in there, and definitely the best one in the South. As attacking mid, I've gone for Christian Eriksen. I feel like that's self-explanatory. He's a great, great player. I'm surprised a team like Real Madrid have not come in from over his career.
I still don't think he gets the credit he deserves, Eriksen.
No, I can't believe it either, because he is the midfield metronome, and his set-piece deliveries are incredible. If you have him in your team, you know you can cause one goal a game, and that is one of those world-class players when you talk about that. And of course, up front, no question about it, Harry Kane.
Obviously.
I agree with your lineup. I think Doucouré is a very good shout. I think it would have been very easy to miss him. Obviously being at Watford. Pleased to see him there. Kieran Trippier as well might raise a few eyebrows. I'm trying to think if you could put Azpilicueta at right back and put in a different centre back, but not so sure. Willian, for me, I think I'd have put him in over Hazard if you're basing it on current form, personally. But yeah, good team. Can't really argue with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll put it this way. My subs were Victor Moses, Ryan Bertrand, Kante, Dyer, Willian, Ali and Ozil. Ali and Ozil were more in there because of their ability rather than their form this season. Frankly, neither of them has been up to scratch. Ozil, put it this way, if he was rated 82 on the next FIFA, I'd consider that generous. It's been shocking this year. Absolutely shocking. I can't understand how anyone talks about him as being one of the best midfielders in the world.
Did you consider Ross Barkley?
Why would I?
Why not?
No one considers Ross Barkley even a Chelsea manager.
So we'll put a poll up so you vote for which side you think will win. Yeah, if you enjoy it, we might do it again in the future with a different set of
East v West or something. I don't know. We don't really have that divide.
Ipswich and Norwich versus Swansea.
Combines Ipswich and Norwich
versus.
East v West
would be the same thing because you've basically picked London, Watford, and I've picked Manchester and Liverpool, so it'd be the same.
Yeah, we'll do Wales v England. That'll be good.
Gareth Bale v England. He's a good player, but I don't think he can take on 11 on his own.
And he plays in Spain.
To be fair, though, the Cardiff team's been very good this year. I don't know if we're counting that or not.
To be fair, I think Cardiff and Swansea combined could be all of the English teams combined. Now you've gone mental.
Only if they had Neil Warnock as manager.
That's true, yeah, he'd beat them easily.
So we're going to finish the show on a bit of a somber note. So Fiorentina have decided to retire the shirt number worn by David Astori, the unfortunate Italian defender who died on Sunday at the age of just 31. His former club, is it Calgary? Where he spent 8 years at and also decided to retire the number 13 shirt. So, yeah.
Yeah, he was a decent defender. He was like always in the Italian squads, and I think hearing some of the things other people have said about him, it's become quite clear that as well as being a very good player, he was clearly a very decent man, clearly a well liked person, and yeah, it's obviously very sad, and yeah.
I mean, it's one of those ones. It's a terrible sadness. I think the only positive thing that can come out of it is that it didn't happen on the pitch.
Yeah.
Because if that had happened, again, it brings us to the question, why isn't more being done to, screen players? Because, it hasn't been confirmed yet, but the rumour is it was a heart attack. It's kind of, it's almost good that it hasn't happened that way. It's terrible that it happened at all.
Mm.
But I think it shows that at the very least, clubs are now doing better at screening this stuff off to stop it from happening on the pitch. If it happens like that, then it's obviously something that's so underlying that even some of the top dogs in the world can't tell it's there. So I think if there's any positive to take out of it, it's that, apart from that, it's an absolute tragedy. He was a very good player, and from all accounts, it's a very deeply respectable man. And I think the response to it has been pretty much perfect. And I think in a broader sense, I don't know how much people know about Italy at the moment with the political situation there. It's all very divided. The Italian team obviously didn't go to the World Cup. I think they needed something that was going to be a bit unifying.
Yeah.
And again, it's looking for the positives in a horrible situation. I think this can be a bit of a unifying thing. But it's a sombering moment, but it's out of those moments that the good things can come, that progress can be made. So I think, again, it can inspire the medical professionals in sports to maybe be looking at different things too. Not having the immediate pressure of it's happening on the pitch, so we've got to make something look like it's being done immediately without really looking into it. And I think for Italy, it's a reminder of their shared nationhood. It seems like a ridiculous thing to say because it's football, but I think after the year they've had, I think it's bringing more people together, and I think that's a positive thing.
Yeah, that's just up and down. I'm just 31's no age. I'm 36. It's like, all right, so thanks for joining us tonight. Please follow us on Twitter, it's at V2Football, where you can vote in our poll on who you think picked the best team. Was it Anthony's Northern team or Shane's Southern team? And then check out our website, it's at v2football.com. Next week is going to be the return of the 72 show, rather than having our normal main show. So that should be fun. So, good night.
Good night.